Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Are Liverpool ready to hit the stride after rolling over Leeds? Or will the Reds show their other side as Forest come to Anfield this weekend? I'm alongside James Pearce and Ollie Kay to get into that, as well as weighing up what the team can gain from the remainder of the season. But first, we'll begin with the three words. And Ollie, because you are a guest on the show, give us three words.
We'll go for intrigued by Trent.
Very interesting. James?
I will go with no backward steps.
Well, I like that. And of course, the Walk On Facebook group, they've been sending their three words in. Anti-leg, same intensity again. Yep. Tony Knoch, trust in Klopp. Michael Quayle, no mistakes, please, in capital letters. I like that. John Weller, keep wins coming. I'd say, same again, please. Very cautious. Does the count as a word? I don't know.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
What I do know is Monday night was great. But what do we expect on Saturday? James, they've struggled for consistency, especially against teams in the lower half. Come on, what are we going to see?
Well, I think if we've learned anything from the course of this season, it's not to make any bold predictions, Tony. I think with you haven't been able to trust this Liverpool team. That's been the problem from week to week in terms of what you're going to get. The absolute epitome of that was having to sit through that dismal performance at Bournemouth, a week after, a historic demolition of Manchester United. So I think there is reason to believe this time it will be different, because I think you only had to look at the strength of the bench the other night when, the points were long since won against Leeds. But when you're bringing on players of the calibre of Nunes and Thiago, and of course Luis Diaz being back around as well, you think to yourself, well, surely they can't take a step back after what happened against Leeds. And I watched Forest against Man United last weekend, and Forest were absolutely abysmal. Something will have to go seriously wrong for Liverpool not to continue the momentum they built up on the weekend. But we've been here before.
Well, yeah, I mean, because let's face it, talking about Bournemouth, we lost there. I mean, we just beat them 9-1 on aggregate. Anyway, but we did lose at the City Ground, didn't we? And obviously it's a different thing there. But Ali, you obviously are not at every Liverpool game. You're covering other teams all the time. How do you see it? Is it confidence? Is it structural in the setup? Is it the manager?
I would say the season began with it being a structural issue with the midfield not being right, and maybe a fitness issue with it felt like a lot of players came into season either injured or not looking at peak fitness. And then it snowballed into what I think has been a major psychological issue with the team for large chunks of the season, which then has compounded the structural issue. So it's felt like it's become a vicious circle at times. And, there have been times when Liverpool have broken that vicious circle. It was a good run just before the World Cup. There was a good run. It wasn't a long run, but it was a good run sort of mid-February to early March, the time of the 7-0 over United. But it just feels like there's been, how Liverpool have been such a momentum team under Klopp and even under Rodgers before that. And the momentum, they've just never really been able to build it this season. And you know that if they can get on a run of 5-6 wins, that will probably sort of perpetuate itself. But they've never really looked like doing that.
Yeah, I mean, Leeds were really bad. We've got to be honest about that. A Roy Hodgson team scored 5 against them. Shouldn't we have scored 17 or 18 then, James? No, that's a joke. No, Liverpool played really well, and I was well pleased with the performance. But Forest, they've only won 1 in 15 away games. They've been abject away from home. This is one where they've got to win, haven't they? And as Ollie was saying, one of the things is, with any team, a bad season can kind of transform in a minute. Put 4 or 5 wins together, and the mood in the dressing room, the mood all around the club changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's why I think, regardless of whether anything Liverpool can do in these last 8 games, whether it does lead to them, you know, miraculously salvaging fourth spot, or whether they end up in the Europa League, or, you know, potentially even worse, the Conference League, you have to go into the summer with some positives to cling to. Yes, we all know that this summer is a big one for the club in terms of the overhaul, stepping up a gear in terms of what needs to be done. But you can't, even going back a couple of weeks, I just thought, you know, you can't. People were saying, this season just a write off now, and it's like, well, it's not, is it? Because you've got players playing for their futures. Hmm. You've also got players who know they're going to probably go, but they're playing for a contract and a move elsewhere. You know, you've got young players desperately trying to force their way into Klopp's plans for next season. So, there is still a lot to go for. And it, as you said, Tony, it's about the mood as well, isn't it? You know, it would have such a different feel to it, wouldn't it, if Liverpool were to go and win the rest of their remaining fixtures, regardless of whether that gets them fourth or fifth. It just gives you that hope going into the summer that with 3 or 4 new faces, they will be proper challengers again next season.
Well, that's it. You go into your holidays, don't you, and you think to yourself, you know what, when I come back, it won't be the same as last season. It'll be different. We've got a chance of winning. If you've got that feeling of positivity going into the summer, it makes a massive difference.
Yeah, and you look at individuals as well. I mean, there's been criticism of various Liverpool players this season. I mean, not all of them, really, at some stage. Trent Alexander-Arnold has had a lot of criticism. Van Dijk, Robertson even at times. Fabinho, obviously. Henderson, even Mo Salah, you know, despite the number of goals he scored, there have been questions of his form, and Nunez as well. And you think, well, it's not just about what we as a public or the fans need to see. It's about those players needing to probably prove to the manager, prove to themselves that, look, you might have some concerns this summer, but they're not about me. And Curtis Jones being another classic case. I mean, it felt like Curtis Jones had been sort of written off by a lot of people. And then he's come back and played, started the last 3 games. And I think looked more and more like himself. I thought he played very well in the second half on Monday at Leeds. So there's so much to play for. There's always so much to play for.
You know, you need to bounce into the new season, and a winning run would mean that when they arrive back after the break, then they'd be all feeling good about it, glad to see each other and moving on. If we continue this spotty form, James, it'd be a pretty downbeat pre-season, wouldn't it? We don't want that.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about trying to build up a little bit of momentum. And as Ollie said, you know, there's a lot of players in that dressing room who I'm sure, you know, look in the mirror and think, I haven't done myself justice this season for a whole host of different factors. Some haven't been able to because of fitness issues. Some have just had crisis of confidence and just a lack of form. Some have suffered as a result of the team unit falling to pieces. So there's a lot of people in there with a point to prove between now and the middle of May. I mean, it would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? For, you know, as disappointing this season has been, if things just petered out, then, you know, that also, it doesn't fuel that hope as well that they are going to turn it around. Because I don't think it's as easy as just like flicking a switch and saying, oh, it's okay because we're going to get 3 or 4 new faces in the summer. We'll be different next season. And Klopp will know that, because I think that was why you saw him so kind of pumped up, you know, in stoppage time at the sight of those 4 Liverpool players hounding the Leeds player just before the final whistle, and what he was like, you know, tapping the Liver Bird on his chest when he went across to the way end afterwards, because it was like, yes, some signs of life, signs of a team getting their identity back.
Yeah, it felt like people were recovering their appetites, and that's what they need to do. And one of the things is, you know, between the 3 of us, we've been around football a long time, but probably, I don't even want to count the years, but it might well be coming up, oh, certainly past 75. I don't even want to think about it. But it never ceases to amaze me, one, how fragile dressing rooms can be, and then secondly, how suddenly robust they can get if their attitude's right and a series of results go in their favour.
I remember speaking to a sports psychologist about a decade ago, and he was saying he could walk into a training ground and you could know instantly just from the look on one person's face and just watching them train, you could know whether they're in a good spell or a bad spell. You see it, the body language, and I think it's massively, massively underestimated and underappreciated as a factor in football. You look at the way Liverpool at times over the past few years have been absolutely on the crest of a wave where they've just looked utterly unstoppable. And then there have been other periods, not just this season, but two seasons ago in that sort of early 2021 period behind closed doors, when they just looked helpless, where the momentum's gone and they've not known where it's going to come back. You know, they've not known where the next goal's going to come from, never mind the next win. Klopp has been very, very good at that, brilliant at that. But probably the thing he's found harder is restoring it once it's gone. I think, you know, the bad periods, of which this season has probably been one long bad period, have been concerning, really. I think that it shows that once the wheels come off, it can be quite hard to get them back on.
Yeah, definitely. One concern, James, is that sometimes Saturdays at 3 o'clock can be a little flat, especially when the opposition's sort of, how should we put it, a bottom-dwelling team. I mean, do you think it'll be flat on Saturday, or do you think everyone will be well up for it?
No, I think people will be up for it. I think especially off the back of what we saw with that spirited fight back against Arsenal, and then, you know, the first proper away performance it felt like in a long, long time. So no, I know what you mean, but it's not. I loathe the 12:30 kickoffs in terms of
they're the worst. Think, they are the worst.
And Liverpool's results certainly back up that this season. They don't think much of it themselves. I think that slot with, you know, the lack of goals and the lack of points secured at that point, because it is so flat. I think even when big fixtures get allocated to that time, it doesn't feel like it because of the time of day you're kicking off. So I'd expect it to be decent on Saturday. I think the big thing for me is you just want to see Liverpool start well, because as good as it was to see them fight back against Arsenal, they still showed nothing for 20 minutes and gifted Arsenal the initiative and, yeah, did brilliantly to fight back, but it shouldn't have needed that. And even the other night at Leeds, you know, it gets lost in the aftermath because Liverpool was so much better than Leeds second half. But, you know, for 30 minutes, again, Liverpool were pretty abject and you could see how brittle things are. You know, you think if Leeds had scored first, who knows, it could have been different. So you just want to see Liverpool go and impose themselves on a game from the start. And certainly in terms of the mentality as well, surely there should be a lot of players as well in that dressing room now with the competition for places that Klopp has got, looking at it and thinking, well, I have to produce, because if I don't, you know, there's someone breathing down my neck ready to take my spot. And I don't think that's been the case for large chunks of the season.
The best word I can say, but will describe this, was boom.
Tony Evans here with James Pearce and Ollie Kay with Walk On. Right, 8 games to go. Who's a bigger four, the players, Ollie or Klopp?
I would say the players for the reasons I mentioned earlier. I mean, Klopp's future is secure as long as he's persuaded of it and convinced that he can get Liverpool competing for the big prizes again. Nobody's wanting to sort of run him out of town or anything like that. But I think a lot of the players do need to prove what they can do and remind Klopp and remind the fans and remind themselves what they need to do. I mean, it's probably some are in a different point to prove category than others because, you know, it's just a sort of temporary blip. But someone like Fabinho, who's there have been enough concerning things said and written and whispered about him all season about his form. Can he recover it? Is he in decline? Or was he just a sort of victim of the collective struggle this season? Someone like Fabinho, someone like Henderson, again, big point to prove. Even Van Dijk, who's, I think sometimes his struggles have been exaggerated, but I think he needs to persuade people. And maybe in his case, it's more about persuading opponents that he's still that he's still the best around and that aura is still there. So there are so many players who have something to prove, whether it's the manager, the fans, the wider public, themselves, even the opposition.
I mean, I think we all know there's going to be a few players coming in the summer, and the team, certainly the midfield, is going to have a very different look next season. Or you'd think so. I mean, it is, isn't it, James?
Yeah. I don't think anything that happens in the next six weeks or whatever, results-wise or change, you know, what the club's recruitment plans, because I think I think they are pretty crystallised already in terms of what needs to be done. I think, you know, you're probably looking at 4 or 5 new faces this summer. We know that, you know, at least 2 of those will be in midfield. That's pretty clear. It's just giving you that belief around that, isn't it? You know, like I said before, I don't think you can't just pin everything on new blood's going to come in and just transform the place. You know, just as important are getting players back to their best who have been miles off it this season. And, you know, Fabinho, as Ollie just mentioned, probably the perfect example of that in terms of someone who, you know, I think most people have been scratching their heads for most of the season thinking, well, what on earth has happened to him? Because he's still the right side of 30. You know, he's not a player that ever massively relied on amazing acceleration. He hasn't just suddenly come back from a bad injury. It was all pretty baffling why his form fell off a cliff. So, yeah, you certainly want to see him. You want to see Curtis Jones as well continue to build on the opportunities he's had. And, you know, even defensively, you look at whether it's Joel Matip or Joe Gomez that gets an opportunity with the schedule in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, there's a midweek game next week with West Ham. You think, you know, one of, you know, those two have both got a point to prove, because, you know, I think everyone expects Liverpool, as well as signing at least 2 midfielders, to bring in another centre back this summer to really push Konate and Van Dijk to a bigger degree and give them more quality in that area. So, you know, they've got something to prove. We know that Kate is going. We know Oxlade-Chamberlain's going. Milner's obviously coming to the end of his contract as well. You know, Adrian's out of contract. Firmino's off. So there's, you know, there's gaps to plug there. You know, regardless of, you know, other players who may well get an opportunity to move on, like, you know, Quiveen Kelleher would be the perfect example of that. You know, if he gets an opportunity to be a number one somewhere else, you know, Liverpool, he's probably, you know, arguably one of Liverpool's most valuable kind of sellable assets this summer.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, as well, you know, new players can come in, but there's very few players who can transform things overnight. They need to come into a place where the mood's good and people are playing well, because we've seen the struggles this season. We've seen Gakpo, and we've seen Nunes, and we've seen it's been difficult for them coming into the team that's misfiring. That's one of the important factors, isn't it, Ollie?
Yeah, it is, and you could add Nunes to that category we were talking about earlier. You know, he scored, I think, 9 Premier League goals, 15 in all competitions, which might sound reasonable for a first season, but I think we all know there are still rough edges. At times they've looked rougher as the season has gone on. He probably looked a better player in those first couple of appearances, Community Shield and Fulham away, than he has done for most of the season. So he is an example of somebody who needs to finish this season strongly. I think everybody seems to be convinced he'll do better next season. Well, I think he will be a lot more convinced of that if he ends this season well with a flurry of goals. So I suppose getting that one off the bench the other night will probably help him. But yeah, there is definitely that issue of it being a lot easier to integrate into a successful team or an informed team, happy team, where everyone's pulling in the same direction, than going into a team where everyone's sort of looking at each other and not quite sure who's performing, who they can rely on. If you are going to get players coming in and hitting the ground running, like, you know, if it's Mason Mount or Alexis McAllister or whoever else it ends up being, could be one of dozens of names, it will be so much easier if they're going into a happier, more positive environment where people aren't immediately feeling under massive pressure.
Well, definitely, definitely. And one way you don't feel that people are ready to finger point at the first thing that goes wrong. Let's get on to, you said you were intrigued before, Ollie, so I'm going to stay with you for the moment. Trent.
Yeah, there's been this ongoing debate, and it probably started when he was playing brilliantly 3-4 seasons ago, but it's definitely been gained another dimension this season when he's not been performing as well. But there's been this sort of assumption that because he's been a world-class right-back, he should end up in midfield, which of course is where he played in his youth team days. I've found myself thinking, well, I'm not convinced of that. You're world-class in one position. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll be world-class in another. You've seen Pep Guardiola do it, you know, at Bayern Munich with Alaba and Lahm, and I've never been that convinced by it. I always thought those players were even better at fullback or Alaba centre-back than they were in midfield. So I've been a sceptic all along about the Trent midfield situation. They clearly tried it against Arsenal. Not, obviously, he still started at right back. That's the important distinction. But he had this sort of floating role where he sort of in possession, he would go into more central positions, and it would end up 3-2, 2-3, I guess you'd call it, with him as one of the two in front of the defence. And first half against Arsenal, I thought, well, look, that really doesn't work. We can write that off. But then second half against Arsenal worked really well. Against Leeds, it worked really, really well. I'm surprised by it and impressed by it and, as I said, intrigued by it, because I would still be aware of how poor it looked in that first half hour, 40 minutes or so against Arsenal. But there's no doubt that when Liverpool are dominating possession and are able to play a game on their own terms, as they were in that second half against Arsenal, as they were for, you know, the final hour at Leeds, he was a big factor in them playing at their own terms. But in those games, it looks like it really, really could work. And I'm impressed. And I'm also probably thinking maybe this should have been tried a lot earlier.
Well, I mean, the first game of the season against Fulham, he was drifting inside then and drifting forward. So, I mean, it's not like... I mean, James, do you see it as a change of system, or do you just see it as a tweak? I mean, for want of a better phrase, he's a floating fullback.
Yeah, I think the big difference in the last two games compared to what we've seen previously is previously it was all down to Trent to decide as of when he did drift into those central areas. Klopp had said to him, you know, back your intuition and your initiative, you know, when you feel the time is right. And yeah, you're right, but you know, it's not suddenly something new, is it, seeing Trent pop up in central areas with the ball. But I think where there has been a change in the strategy is that he effectively now is in the middle pretty much every time Liverpool are in possession. And then when Liverpool don't have the ball, he goes back to right back, and you know, Konate has a lot of space to cover during those periods. But it has worked a treat the last two games. As Ollie said, I think there were signs of it working against Arsenal without it being, you could see it was new and he was learning, but you could see how much he was enjoying himself at Elland Road the other night. And of course, it's different, isn't it, doing it against Leeds or doing it against Tottenham or Villa and some of the tougher games that Liverpool have got remaining. But from what I've been told, it's given him a bit of a lift as well, you know, after a tough period.
You can actually see that, can't you? Because his body language was dire for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, he did have a really tough period. And, you know, I don't think, you know, being a local boy like he is and, you know, having, you know, grown up following the club, you know, this season will have hurt him as, you know, as much as anyone, if not more than anyone, in terms of the team's performances and the feeling of at times not being able to do himself justice. He does feel energized by this change of role. He feels that it does kind of accentuate the positives of his game and allow him to influence games to a greater degree. And you know, we certainly saw that against Leeds the other night. One thing I don't really go along with, because I had a lot of people when we did the Q&A after the game the other night, people saying, well, we now need to buy one less midfielder, but we need to buy a right back. And it's like, well, hang on a minute, he is actually still playing right back. I think that's probably one important thing to say. So it's at the moment, there's no sign of Klopp saying, you know, he is no longer a right back, he's a centre midfielder. It's this hybrid role, inverted fullback, call it whatever you want. But you know, at the minute, he still is officially Liverpool's right back, and it'll just be interesting to see whether is that how it's going to stay, or is this just going to be a horses for courses approach depending on who they're facing, or will he go into midfield permanently? That's unclear at the minute. But at the moment, I don't sense that. You know, it's certainly not right to say that Trent is now, he's now a midfielder and Liverpool need to go and buy another right back, because he is still the right back.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I mean, the whole way he was, what he's been doing, where he's playing, it seems to me it's just an extension of the risk-reward factors that you have that surrounds him. You're always going to have that, because he's not a Tommy Smith style defender who's going to lock up one side of the pitch. Actually, Phil Neal would be better comparison, wouldn't it? He's not a Phil Neal style defender who can lock up one side of the pitch and stop the opposition playing. He's not that sort of player. You're always going to get, it's always going to be, you know, walking on the edge, aren't you, when you've got Trent. But the positives are so big that it's worth it. Don't you reckon, Ollie?
Yeah, I mean, people have questioned him a lot the last four or five seasons, because he's the kind of right-back people aren't used to seeing in the Premier League. They might see it in Dani Alves and playing for Barcelona in the Champions League, but It's a style of fullback that we just haven't seen very often in the Premier League. It takes a lot of getting used to. This, you know, 5 years ago, people were very sceptical about goalkeepers playing out of the back and high lines and all of this kind of thing. So there's been a cultural shift in English football in the Premier League in the last 5 years. He's been one of the symbols of that, I guess. And even when he was doing really well, there were people say Liverpool could go through a season and hardly concede any goals, barely lose a game. And people would say, well, he's a weak link at right back. And you think, well, he clearly isn't, because opponents might think that, but very few of them get anywhere against him because of the way Liverpool played. And he was a big part of that. But I think this season, when we haven't seen the same attacking threat from him, and we've probably seen more mistakes from him, more lapses and more collective lapses by the defence, where he's been one of several people culpable for a goal, for example, I think that risk-reward equation looks a bit different. And people have been on his back, and I think sometimes fairly, often very unfairly. He seems to get more criticism than other English fullbacks that make as many mistakes. Rhys James hasn't had a good season either, but seems not to attract the same criticism. But it's, yeah, I would say the risk-reward thing has always been in his favour, less so this season. And I think I can understand there being a desire to just change his role a bit. But like James says, I wouldn't go the whole hog and want to turn him into a number eight who's bombing on all the time. I don't think that would necessarily suit him. I don't think he's a Steven Gerrard type.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ideal situation would be to bring in a couple of more midfielders and let him perform his role as best he can, the way he's been doing it. But James, the last few weeks of the season, who is it the time for? We touched on this earlier on, but who's really got to step up in these last few weeks?
Well, who hasn't got to step up? That's the thing. I mean, in terms of the obvious names that stand out, I think, as Ollie touched upon earlier, I really want to see Darwin Nunes kick on. I think, you know, in this day and age, everyone's in such a rush, aren't they, to hail someone as an amazing hit or a dreadful flop. And the reality with Darwin Nunes is his first season at Liverpool's been okay. I think probably nothing more than that. I think we've seen flashes of his undoubted quality, yet he is still raw. And I think there's big question marks over, can he do off the ball what Klopp wants him to do? Because I think that's the thing at the moment. And that's going to be interesting to see how much football he gets during the run-in. Because I think Gakpo is such an intelligent footballer who, you know, I hold my hands up after a month of Gakpo being at Liverpool. Thought, you know, I wasn't sure. I thought, you know, is this really what Liverpool need? Especially when, you know, they were crying out for a midfielder in January. Yet you look at him now, and he's essentially learnt that number nine role. You know, spoke to him at Stamford Bridge the other week, and he was talking about Firmino giving him advice on how to play it. And he's so good for me in that central role. You do one, you know, and now obviously you've got, you know, Jota scoring again, and you've got Diaz fit. So, you know, I want to see Darwin Nunes kind of make Klopp have to pick him, if you like, with what he's producing on the training pitch and on the minutes he gets. So big for him to go into the summer, because as Ollie said, it's a lot of pressure. You know, if he doesn't have a strong end to the season, that just puts more pressure on him going into next season. And Firmino is an obvious one as well. You don't want to go into the summer hoping he might be a different player next season. You want to go in with that real belief that this is just a blip and he's coming out the other side. So yeah, it's big for a lot of those players. And, you know, Curtis Jones, as we said as well, I love his kind of confidence. When I did a chat with him the other week, and he said, yeah, of course I still back myself. You know, I don't care who Liverpool sign this summer. They can bring in who they want. I back myself to succeed here. You know, I'm not prepared to give up on my dream. And probably at the time, people scoffed. And then, you know, you watch him play as he did the other night, and you think, well, yeah, if he builds on that, then he definitely does have a part to play in this rebuild.
This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
In towards Gerrard! Hello! Hello! Here we go!
This is Walk On from The Athletic with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce and Ollie Kay. To finish today's episode, we're throwing it over to you again. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, email walk-on@theathletic.com. And that's what John Walsh has done. So let's see what John's got to say.
Hey, Tony, how you doing? John here. My point is, we keep on talking about transfers and 100 million for Bellingham and 50 million for Mount and 50 million for blah, blah, blah. Surely the legacy of a great club is producing homegrown players. And the last 10 years, Liverpool have produced Trent and maybe Curtis Jones. Should we not be trying to invest more money in producing local talent instead of forking out mad money on the likes of Bellingham, etc.? So just, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Cheers, Tony. Love the show.
Good stuff there from John. Ollie, what are your views on that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think in terms of the idea of investing more money in it, I think that maybe slightly underestimates the amount of money it costs to run an academy. You know, all Premier League clubs are investing millions and millions and millions in it every year, and it's not easy to get the rewards from that. There's no guarantee that you'll get sort of 10 world class players if you invest 10 times as much money. I mean, Liverpool have, if you look at Alexander Arnold, who has been a top class player, a world class player the last 5 years, that is a big sort of feather in the cap of those who work at the academy. Curtis Jones is a big plus point too, but is it enough for a decade? Is that good enough? Probably not. They would have expected, I think, to have produced more. And I think in some ways it's been harder because the team's been so good. I think it's harder to produce elite players for an elite team than it is. If you look at, for example, when, let's say, Jamie Carragher and David Thompson and people like that were breaking into the Liverpool team, even Mike Lowe, you didn't have to be elite level to make the team at that point. You know, Mike Lowe clearly was, and Jamie Carragher, you know, became a top-class defender, but you didn't. The bar wasn't set so incredibly high that you had to be world-class in your position or top-class in your position in order to make it. I think it's become so difficult, and have been players who have been right, you know, seem to have been on the fringes of it, even people who aren't local like Jordan Ibe and people like that who have been seemingly on the cusp of it and then not really, really been able to kick on. And then people like Ryan Brewster have ended up being sold because they've been good financial assets and haven't really made it elsewhere. I think it's fascinating. It's a really familiar story across all Premier League clubs, really. But I think Klopp did talk a lot a few years ago about wanting a team full of players with Scouse accents. And if there were two equal players, one from elsewhere and a Scouser, that he'd always pick the Scouser.
Yeah, I mean, how would you have broken in if you're, you know, forward when you've got Salah, Mane and Firmino, when the midfield was functioning? You know, basically since, you know, the end of 2017, early 2018, it was difficult to get into that team because all the positions were plugged in. You knew the best players. It's hard for the academy products to get into the side.
I think that is a really, really important point. You have to remember the level that Liverpool are at now and the level they've been at now for a significant period of Klopp's reign, because the bar has gone so high. I was just looking back then, trying to think of a decent example, and without wanting to pick on him, someone like Andre Wisdom played 19 times for Liverpool in 2012-13, which was obviously Rodgers' first season. Now, Andre Wisdom at the time was, you know, a decent rated enough defender, but he was never someone that you ever heard whispers of, thought, wow, this kid's going to be incredible. Yet, you know, he's played 19 games that season. You had, you know, Suso as well, I think, played a similar amount of games. And, you know, of course, there's been others like, you know, John Flanagan obviously was very close to being part of a Liverpool title-winning team in 13-14. You had Jack Robinson, obviously Jerome Sinclair, who there was, you know, big hopes for, still the youngest player ever to play for Liverpool. And now 10 years on, doesn't even have a club and is the manager of a takeaway in Birmingham. So it is very, very difficult to make it at the top level. And I think it's too easy to say, well, there's only Trent and Curtis who have really kind of established themselves, so the academy is not working. Because I think when you actually add up the fees that Liverpool have received for academy players who haven't been quite good enough for Liverpool, but have gone on to get big moves elsewhere, you know, the academy more than pays its way. You know, you look at, you know, someone like Ryan Kent, Harry Wilson, of course, at Fulham, Nico Williams, you know, went for a lot of money to, was it 17 million to Forest? He's a Premier League footballer, Wales international. Ollie mentioned Rian Brewster before. Obviously, things haven't worked out great for him since, but was that £23 million? And I think you're probably looking at the academy cost in Liverpool, £10 to £12 million a year. So it certainly does pay its way. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, of course, if you speak to the staff there, you know, they want more. They want more. They don't sit there with their feet up just watching reruns of Trent play, taking a quick corner against Barcelona. They want to find the next one, but they're all also realistic to know that it's really, really tough.
Yeah, well definitely. I mean, I'm fairly old. I'm very old. But sometimes you look back and you say, oh, this was a golden era. They produced some players. But it seems to me that the way the Premier League is now, and particularly Liverpool in the past 5 years, that if you've got one, not only a starting player in the team, like Trent, but a very, very influential one, and, you know, a Curtis Jones who's on the fringes, you're doing pretty well, Ollie.
Yeah, there aren't too many Premier League clubs that have got, you know, one of their star players being a youth team and you know, an academy product, and another one being sort of on the fringes. You know, I think there'll be plenty who've got no academy players in their team whatsoever, and it's depressing. But I'm just looking at the number of current or recent academy graduates who have played for Liverpool in, you know, early days: Bobby Clark, Cade Gordon, Ben Doak, etc., Owen Beck, and you just think, well, how good are their prospects of making it at Anfield? I mean, they can be sort of the next big thing at 17, 18, where there's a plan to, you know, integrate them into the first team squad, and they might be viewed as the long-term successor to Ben Doak, might be viewed as the long-term successor to Salah, for example. But and this is just me speculating, because I've never heard anyone at Liverpool say that, but it's so difficult to get to that level, the level he will have to get to by the time Mo Salah's sort of on the way down. If he's going to be sort of 19, 20, it's so difficult to get to the level where you're going to be a regular starter for a Liverpool team that will be expected to be challenging for Premier League title, etc.
James, just to round this off, which of the kids do you think is most likely to break through?
Well, Ben Doak is certainly the one. We've seen little flashes already, haven't we, of his ability. And yeah, having watched a lot of the youth games this season, you know, he's been absolutely head and shoulders above everyone else. And I think it's not just his talent, because, you know, I've seen it so many times with young players at under-18s football can, you know, dominate, and then you see them in a men's environment and they struggle and look lost. But, you know, with him, he's got that physical side as well as the technique, and you can just, you know, it's a lovely, you know, kind of, I don't know, like spiky attitude to him as well that, you know, I think will stand him in really good stead. But, you know, you need a lot of good luck as well along the way. You need to be fortunate with injuries. You also need to be fortunate in terms of the opportunity coming along and coming along at the right time for you to be able to grasp it. But yeah, I'm pretty positive, to be honest, about the academy in terms of what they're doing. You know, Bacetic is a good example as well. Okay, he's not someone that Liverpool have brought through from a really young age, like they have done with a lot of the other ones. But, you know, they signed him for next to nothing as a young centre-half. And then Mark Bridge-Wilkinson and Alex Inglethorpe sat down and thought, well, hang on a minute, what is his best pathway to try and become a first-team footballer? And they thought, well, actually, probably not as a centre-back, more as a holding midfielder, taught him that new role. And then, you know, who would have believed at the start of this season that there'd be a point in this season where you'd go, you know, we're really missing Stefan Bacetic, and it was a massive blow, him being out for the rest of the season.
I think that's a very, very succinct summation of the way things are, James. And you know, thanks to John Walsh, because it was a very good question. But that's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James Pearce and Ollie Kay, who can come on anytime he wants, because he's great, as well as you for joining us. Well, it's for us on Saturday. You'll hear us on Monday, and we'll see you then.
Athletic.